Today we're looking at Joseph, and we're going to start in chapter 40 of Genesis. I've got some things I want to pass around this time. I showed you one last time. They think that this might be Joseph. He is an official. It's an Egyptian statue, but he doesn't have Egyptian features. And he's wearing, it's a coat of many colors. And there's another fella who believes that there's a Djoser's stepped pyramid, which is one of the oldest pyramids in Egypt. They found a group of large grain depositories, and they were excavated, and they're joined together. This is a look down into one of them. The thing is massive. And so in the courtyard in front of Djoser's pyramid, there are several of these collection bins, and you can't really tell from the photograph how big it is, but it is massive. And then the third thing is actually an Egyptian drawing of people putting grain in bins, storage bins. And so we do Joseph. Now, I'm going to pass these around, so I trust you to get it over the great gulf here, you know. And historically, we believe that this story is playing out. I'm kind of interested in knowing, all right, which pharaoh was it? We don't know for sure, and I'm really not that old. But we think somebody whose timeline I trust, who has gone back to creation and has worked out the Genesis timeline, believes that this is the 12th or 13th dynasty of Egypt. Now, we're talking about approximately 1700 B.C., 1726 B.C., and it would be the Middle Kingdom, Pharaoh Sesostris I. Now, Pharaoh Sesostris had a vizier working under him who would be the second in charge, and his name was Menuhotep. Is Joseph Menuhotep? I don't know. They give his name in Egyptian in this couple of chapters we're going to study as Zaphnat-Paaneh, which means God speaks and he lives. So that is the Egyptian name of Joseph according to this book. Okay, this is Joseph, story of Joseph part 3. And the first section, the dreams of the prisoners. Now, last time, Joseph is at the low point of his life. He's been thrown into a prison. It's not just any prison, though. It's the king's prison. These are special criminals that have to be watched very closely. And God gave Joseph grace, and so Joseph hadn't done anything to warrant being thrown into prison. And I think maybe Joseph's master, Potiphar, I think he might have known that Joseph wasn't totally guilty, because he didn't have him put to death. He puts him in this kind of executive prison, all right? And so God gives Joseph grace in the eyes of the warden, and the warden, just like Potiphar had before, puts him in charge of everything that he has. He puts him in charge of the prison, except he's overseeing it. And Joseph has all this authority, and God's blessing him. So even at his nadir, even at his low point, God is blessing Joseph. Now, we start out in 40, verse 1. It came to pass after these things. Now, after these things, Potiphar's thrown Joseph in prison, and the warden is having mercy on Joseph, and he's giving him responsibility. That's the context. That's what we're talking about, all right? It came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in the house of the captain of the guard. These are high-ranking government officials, and they've put them in custody in his special keeping, all right, the warden's special keeping. In the prison, the place where Joseph was confined, and the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, all right? So these are special prisoners, and Joseph is being given personal responsibility for them. Chief butler, chief baker, high-ranking officials. Now, a little background. Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, would have been, the butler would have been in charge of his personal retinue, basically his bodyguard and his clothes and that kind of thing. The baker would have been responsible for preparing meals. Okay, so the butler would have been kind of like a cupbearer to protect Pharaoh from being poisoned by drink. The baker would protect Pharaoh from being poisoned by something he ate. You really have to watch that if you're a king. All right, so these guys had high responsibility, and Pharaoh was angry with them, and so here they are. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them. So they were in custody for a while. Then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, had a dream. Both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. Now, in the story of Joseph, dreams come in pairs. Joseph had two dreams, and they were very similar. One reinforced the other. These two guys have dreams, and the dreams are very similar, and each reinforces the other, but they have different outcomes. And then Pharaoh has two dreams, all right? So that's a pattern that goes through the story. And Joseph came into them in the morning and looked at them, and were sad, troubled, dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his Lord's house, saying, "Why do you look..." All right, context again. If you're in Pharaoh's house and you're in his presence and you look downcast and sad, that's a matter of state security. All right? These guys are high-ranking officials. Joseph is charged with their well-being so that they, you know, can testify and that their trials are still in process. He doesn't want them to be poisoned or to die while they're in his custody. You understand? And they're high-ranking officials, and they might have high-ranking enemies. And so Joseph is concerned about this. Why are they're both looking sad? Well, you know, they're in prison, and Pharaoh is mad at them. That'd be enough for me. But Joseph is conscientious, and he says, "Why do you look so sad to them today?" And they said to him, We each have had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. All right? So Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? In other words, God knows the interpretations of dreams. That's His purview. And he says, tell them to me, please. Because he's got a close walk with God right now. And he's thinking God's going to reveal to him what these dreams mean. And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, behold, in my dream a vine was before me, and in the vine were three branches. It was as though it budded, and the blossoms shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. All right, now the chief butler had been the cupbearer for the king, and he was responsible for making sure that the wine wasn't poisoned. Okay, so he's dreamed this thing, and then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said to him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Each branch represents a day. Now within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were his butler. All right? In 3 days, you're going to get your job back. And you're going to be the cupbearer for the king. You're going to be preparing his wine for him, just like in the former days. That's the interpretation of the dream. But remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. Okay? So the guy immediately forgets, but Joseph says, you know, remember me when you're back in Pharaoh's company and put in a good word for me and get me out of this place. For indeed, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews. And also, I have done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon. All right, why is he thrown into the dungeon? Potiphar's wife, the liar, what had he done? Nothing. He resisted. She was coming on to him, and he resisted for days. And the so-called evidence is evidence of his faithfulness. All right? He hadn't done anything to deserve being there. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, I also was in my dream, and there were three baskets of white bread on my head. In the uppermost basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head. So Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation of it. The three baskets are 3 days. You see the repetition of three. Three vines, three baskets, 3 days. Okay, so these dreams seem to be going the same way. All right? But wait, there's more. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree. Now, this does not mean crucified. This means impaled. You don't want to go there. And the birds will eat your flesh from you. Now, I wouldn't take this as my life verse. Now, it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants. And he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. In other words, he lifted up the head. He says, all right, you need to come with me. You need to come out of this place. And he restored the chief butler to his butlership again, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand, just like Joseph had said. But he hanged the chief baker. Now, it doesn't say why, but he hanged him. He had him impaled, so that means that the Pharaoh saw something that he had done as a personal threat to him. Joseph, he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. All right, now, you would think that the chief butler would tell Pharaoh all about this guy in the prison, okay? He forgot about him. But this is in God's timing. When we first see Joseph in this book, he's about 17 years old. That's when he's sold into slavery. Now, he's 29 years old. And he has served well, and he has served Potiphar, and he's been faithful, and you would think God would bless him, and he's been thrown into prison, and this is the low point of his life. When you're at the low point, remember God's timing, okay? God is working not only to deliver Joseph, but to deliver Israel and to deliver Egypt. Okay? There are bigger things afoot here than just Joseph's well-being. Okay? You got to remember that. Yet the chief butler, verse 23, did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. All right. Here he is. He's still in prison. He's going to be in prison for 2 more years. That's a long time when you're counting off the days. All right. Point two, Pharaoh's dreams. Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he stood by the river. All right, what river is it? It's the Nile. All right, in Egypt, the Nile is a big deal. And I have stood in Egypt, and one of the things that I remember about it was you're standing there, and everything is lush and green, and all of a sudden, it's like somebody had drawn a line, it's desert. It's just bare sand. So you got lush green and you got bare sand. Okay? And the Egyptians basically worshiped the god of the Nile. It was a kind of an alligator god. The Egyptians got their livelihood from the Nile. So he stood by the river. A lot of Egyptians stood by the river. But that was their life, okay? It was a great blessing. Pharaoh had a dream. Behold, he stood by the river. Suddenly, there came up out of the river 7 cows, fine-looking and fat. And they were feeding in the meadow, all right? Because there's a lot of greenery right by the Nile. And they're eating grass, all right? And they're fine cows, fat cows, 7 of them. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them out of the river, ugly and gaunt, unpleasant and skinny, and stood by the other cows on the bank of the river. And the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine-looking cows, and fat cows. So Pharaoh woke up. He slept and consumed a second grain. And suddenly, seven heads of grain came up on one stalk, plump and good. Then behold, seven thin heads blighted by the east wind. Wind blows from the east, it's blown from the desert, all right? It can wither things. And seven thin heads blighted by the east wind sprang up after them, and the seven thin heads devoured full heads. So Pharaoh awoke, and indeed, it was a dream. Okay. Would it bother you if you had this dream? Yeah, it bothered Pharaoh because he doesn't know what it means. Now, it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled. You know, he can't get a peace about this thing. And he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. He gets his magicians, he gets his learned men, and he asked them. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. Then the chief butler spoke up. He said to Pharaoh, now you got to see God's in this. All right, he's not named, but he's in this. The chief butler spoke to Pharaoh. I remember my faults this day, but I have really messed up. I remember my faults this day. And Pharaoh, okay, what is it? Do we need to prepare a room for you at the prison again? When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both and the chief butler, we each had a dream in one night, he and I. Each dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now, there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard. Now, who's that? That's Potiphar, yeah. It would be the warden, right. A servant of the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came to pass, just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me to my office, and he hanged him. Joseph nailed this, not just for me, but for the baker. The sent and called Joseph. Well, okay, 2 years have passed. The cupbearer or the chief butler has forgotten about him, and you say, where's God? Well, God's in this. Pharaoh called for Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon, and he shaved. The Egyptian were all clean shaven. They don't have big beards and things. And he shaved, changed his clothing, and came to Pharaoh. So they gave him a nice set of clothes. I mean, and he comes to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream. There's no one. But I have heard it said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it. So Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. All right? Now, what can we learn from that? All right. Joseph, he could toot his own horn. All right? And he doesn't. He gives God the glory. All right? He says, it's not in me. But God, now he's not talking about the God of the Egyptians. He's talking about the God, the real God. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, in my dream I stood on the bank of the river. Suddenly, seven cows came up out of the river, fine-looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. And behold, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt. such ugliness as I have never seen in all of the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the first seven, the fat cows. When they had eaten them up, no one had known that they had eaten them, for they were just as ugly as at the beginning. Also, I saw in my dream, and suddenly seven heads came up on one stalk, full and clean. Then behold, seven heads, withered, thin, and blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the seven good heads. So I told this to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. All right. Pharaoh has a power of life and death over Joseph. All right. But God's in this. All right. Joseph is on the way up. All right. He says, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. In other words, these two dreams you've had are the same thing. Doubled, repeated for emphasis, emphatic, okay? They're one. And he says, God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. What God is about to do, all right? He says, the seven good cows are 7 years. And the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. They're identical. So the seven cows and the seven heads refer to 7 good years. And then he says, and the seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years. And the seven empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years. Now he says it, a famine. Now, I'm talking to a room full of people who grew up in a land where we don't have famine. Starvation, they say, is a terrible thing. And in the siege of Stalingrad in 1943, the German Sixth Army had surrounded Stalingrad, and the people were reduced to eating one handful of bread per day. Okay? That is not enough to live on. And those guys were trying to eat the wood off the coffins to stay alive. Okay? Famine is a terrible, terrible thing. Okay? And I pray to the Lord that none of you will ever know that firsthand. But you got to realize that in the ancient world, if you had a famine, people are going to start dying. Okay? And it's a terrible thing. If Pharaoh is in charge of a country and they are dying of famine, they're going to take it out on him personally. There's going to be a revolt. So Pharaoh's well-being is very much in play here, all right? It happened to Caesar later, right before the fall of the Roman Empire, 455 A.D., one of the Caesars, they had a famine in Rome. Well, the Caesars would take grain from Egypt on these huge grain ships, and each ship could carry 600 people. We're talking huge ships. And they would ply the Mediterranean from Alexandria to Rome, and that's how the Caesars kept inflation down. The Caesars could give the people cheap bread. They were using Egypt as the breadbasket of Rome. Now, this is way before that here, but Egypt, if Egypt is starving, guess what? Everybody's starving, all right? Pharaoh needs wisdom here. And I know just the guy. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh, verse 28, what he is about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following, for it will be very severe. And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. All right, emphasis. Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Now, I do not think that Joseph is making a power play here. I don't think he's thinking of himself at all. He says, you need to get somebody who's wise and put him in charge of this, because somebody's going to have to help you in this. You can't do it by yourself. And let Pharaoh do, let him appoint officers over the land to collect 1/5, 20%, of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 plentiful years. All right? This is a grain tax. They're going to have 7 good years, and everybody who's producing grain, they're going to take 20%, 1/5, and they're going to store it in granaries. Huge granaries. Let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food. All right, we need to stockpile this for 7 years. It's kind of like later under Moses when they would take, when they were eating the manna in the wilderness. And on the 6th day before the Sabbath, there was a kind of a double portion of the manna. Okay, so that it would, because nobody's supposed to be out there working on the Sabbath. You know, it's kind of like that. He says, then that food shall be as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land may not perish during the famine. All right. Point number 3, Joseph's rise to power. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants, to be forewarned, to be forearmed, okay? This is from God. If they act wisely, Pharaoh will be fine. All right, so Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God? Now, he doesn't say the Spirit of the gods, does he? He says the Spirit of God. So they haven't been asking old Crocodile Head. You know, they haven't been asking the Lord of the Flies or the Frogs about this. They've been asking the God of Joseph. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house. All right? So he's going to put him in charge of the palace. This isn't Potiphar now. This is the king of Egypt. You shall be over my house. And my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. He's going to make him grand vizier. And in other words, he's going to be like assistant Pharaoh. And assistant Pharaoh does the work. Okay? It's like the platoon sergeant. Do you think that shave-tail lieutenant knows what he's doing? Who does the work? The platoon sergeant. Well, here's a job opportunity. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." All right, you've got this authority. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand. Now, the signet ring is what you use to seal documents. All right, this is what the father gave the prodigal son. That's authority. All right. And he put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen. Now, hey, when it's hot, fine linen keeps you from sweating as much. You don't want to wear wool in the desert, all right? Fine linen is what priests were wearing later on in the temple. Fine linen, and Egypt had the best linen. And he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. That's probably a badge of office. All right. And he had him ride in the second chariot, which he had. And they cried out before him, "Bow the knee." So he set him over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh also said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." You know what that is? That's power. That's power. All right. Nobody can set foot in all the land of Egypt without your say-so. And lift the hand is like defense or assault or something like that. Okay. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paaneah. And this is Egyptian. It means God speaks and he lives. God has given Joseph the interpretation, and Joseph is alive. Not only is he alive, he's really alive. And he called him as his wife, Asenath. Now, that means belonging to Neith, which it was an Egyptian goddess. So he's married an Egyptian girl here. And she's the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. On was a religious center in Egypt, which they've excavated. Now, Potipharah is not Potiphar. This guy's a priest, but the name is similar. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land. He's going around, and there's a whole lot of bowing the knees, and he's got the chariot with the real nice hubcaps. Now, in the seven plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly. Bumper crops. And he gathered up all the food of the seven cities which were in the land of Egypt and laid up the food in the cities. He's taking that 20% tithe, or well, it's twice the tithe. He's taking 20% of the harvest and storing it, all right? And it says, Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting, for it was immeasurable. They got so much grain that they really didn't have the numbers for it. He's off the charts. All right. Who gave them that great harvest? It wasn't a crocodile head. It wasn't a voodoo chicken in New Orleans. It wasn't the United States government. No, it was God. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those grain bins are associated with one of the oldest pyramids. It's the Step Pyramid of Djoser, Djoser. That is the ones that they show you. It's the oldest pyramid. Okay, and it's out, according to this pop archaeologist, it's out in a courtyard in front of it. And these things are huge, and they're joined under the ground. So, yeah, you can access them, and when one goes down, they kind of balance out and everything. That photograph doesn't do it justice. Those things are immense. They're huge. Yeah, they did store grain, but they didn't store grain on this magnitude. So I imagine they had to be a special thing. Joseph, of course, was in charge of it. It says, and to Joseph, two sons before the years of famine came, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. What we're saying is that two of the people who are going to be, they're going to have tribes named after them, are actually half Egyptian. And he, the first one, Manasseh, for God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. In other words, Manasseh, I wouldn't name my teenager forgetful, but Manasseh was named forgetfulness because Joseph isn't going to hold it against his brothers what they did. Well, he's going to get them back royally, but he's going to forget, and he's forgetting all that happened in the past. It's kind of like when Paul says, forgetting those things which are behind, I press on to the high calling in Christ Jesus. You know, he's forward-oriented. He's looking to what God is going to do, and he's not letting the past be a drag. He says, and the name of the firstborn called Manasseh, forgetfulness, for God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, fruitful. For God has caused me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Forgetful, fruitful. Manasseh, Ephraim. Then the 7 years of famine, which were in the land of Egypt, ended. 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said. The famine was in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So when all the land of Egypt, then Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph, whatever he says, do it. What a job, man. You're Pharaoh? Okay, yeah, Joseph will handle it. You wouldn't believe what's happening to us. Go to Joseph. He'll tell you what to do, you know. I'm talking to some people who might be Joseph in your place of office. You do all the work, they get all the glory. Isn't that the way it goes? And so, the famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine became severe in the land of Egypt. So all countries came to Joseph in Egypt. Guess who comes to buy grain? That's next week. That's part four. Because the famine was severe in all of Egypt. All right, what do we make of this? Number one, trust God. If you're at the bottom, trust God and His timing and His way. God has a plan, and the way is from here. Okay? Number two, God will guide us even when we're perplexed. Joseph, he told that cupbearer, the steward, he told him to remember him, and the guy forgot him. He stayed in prison for 2 more years. What is happening, Lord? Do you remember me? And you know what? God is working. Number three, trust God's guidance through difficult problems. He's not going to leave you there. He's going to glorify his name. And finally, accept challenges confident of God's guidance. What the Hebrews would do is they would look back and they would see how God had delivered them. They would look up to God because he's the same God as he was, and then they look to the future in faith because God has a plan. Let's close with a prayer. Father, we thank you for delivering Joseph and Israel and Moses. We thank you for delivering Egypt, because in prophecy it says the day will come when they will be called sons of God. There will be a revival. And I thank you for that. I thank you for your mercy on the Gentiles by Abraham. And we see you blessing the Egyptians here and using your man with wisdom to the elected leaders in this country, that they might not kick you to the curb, but that they might be wise and look to you. Father, help us to look to you for deliverance and not to human programs. Help us to thank you who knows the end from the beginning, and for the Son you have sent. In his name, amen.